All right. Well, thank you everybody for joining our training here on systems thinking through changes. It's a really exciting program. I'm really excited to be here and learning more about it. But without further ado, what I'll do is I'll kick it over to David to introduce himself and the team and facilitators that are here today. And we'll do it better justice than I could in both introducing the topic, but then also introducing his wonderful background as well. So why don't I kick it over to you, David?
Thanks, Ruth. Ruth, if you haven't seen from the background, there is a slide deck, and there's also links to three Google Sheets, Google presentations that accompany this workshop. So you'll get them along the way. You'll probably want to refer to them later on. So this is the action learning guide that we have in front of you, and I'll step through it a little bit. Here's the agenda for today. We're going to spend this first hour doing a presentation. We're in the welcome. We'll talk about systems thinking as systems changes learning. We have the System Changes Learning Circle in Toronto that is the originators of this branch of systems thinking. And we'll step you through the methods, which are action learning processes that are presented as a hub and four spokes. We'll break for lunch. We'll come back after lunch. Ruth will push us into three different breakout rooms, and we'll reform as groups. If people haven't met each other, you can spend some time getting to know each other. Then we'll actually step through each of the hub and spokes. So knowing from within, contextual influences, about 20 minutes each. Actually, the whole time that you have in the workshop is yours. And so if you're faster or slower, it's up to you. You can decide to accelerate. These are just kind of guidelines for how long it'll take. When it gets to diagnosing rhythmic disorders, we know it's going to take a little bit longer, so have a little more time there. Take a break, come back in the workshop. Prognosing likelihoods and reordering pacing are the last two spokes. There's 20 minutes for you to reflect on your progress and your process, and you do a pre-retrospective. And what you can do with that is then we come back as a group in part four with the readouts. We'll have a show and tell. Each group will get 10 minutes to present. And then we have as homework for whoever is going to be responsible for that on your team, a summary one page of the workshop. But we've already discussed everything. In the reflecting and the show and tell. So it's just be a matter of just putting that down on paper so you have a reference point that's helpful in the future. So we are the core of the System Changes Learning Circle. We started at the, it's a combination overlapping people from the Center for Social Innovation in Toronto. At OCADU, there's a Strategic Foresight Innovation Program. And System Thinking Ontario is a monthly meeting that we've been running for 10 years. So it's been a long time. So I'm David Ng. I have two sides. One is that I've been is that I was president of the International Society for the System Sciences. For those of you who don't know, Toronto is a system thinking hub of the world because we have a lot of system thinking people here in the program. They all participate in System Thinking Ontario. We have Dan Ng and Kelly Okamura, who will be guiding two of the breakout sessions, and Zad Khan, who is not here today but is a member of our team. So these are the teams as they're going to break out. Team A for Adrian, Team E for Elise, and Team M for Megan. You each have your own Google Doc to work on. And what I suggest you do when you get into the Zoom breakout is do a screen share. Well, actually, you don't have to do a screen share, but you can actually all edit the document simultaneously, or you can decide one person's going to write on it. That's up to you. But you can use the document and fill in the blanks, as you'll see. So systems thinking in 1 hour is a really interesting challenge, and there's a lot of branches of systems thinking. For those who want to actually go, there's a reference at the bottom. Magnus Ramage and Karen Shipper at the Open University in the UK, and they created this categorization of all these different schools of system thinking. So of the schools of system thinking, the ones that I'm closest to are general systems theory. General systems theory tends to look at systems, what we call isomorphisms, things that you can learn from one system to another. So there's a heavy emphasis on biology and learning from biology because a lot of systems thinking tends to be based in physics. And you'll encounter that as we go along. You'll see, oh, maybe that's not a physics idea, it's a chemistry idea, or it's a biology idea, or it's an ecology idea. And general system theory crosses those. So often critical systems tend to work much more on human systems, and the questions you get into who's included in conversations, how you approach debate, dialectic, these sorts of things. Learning systems are oriented towards not just systems that operate, but systems that learn, and we'll get into why it's called system changes learning in a minute. And then on top of that, the new research we've added on to this is ecological anthropology, which is a new field. When I was president of the ISSS for my plenary, I had this talk on rethinking system thinking, because a lot of system thinking has been framed in the 1980s, 1990s, and there's been a lot of work done since 2000. Ecological anthropology is one branch that we've been leaning a lot on. And for this, you actually look over time and you look at affordances and those sorts of things. We're using a lot of post-colonial and Chinese philosophy of science. And so you're going to see things that are creeping in from classical Chinese medicine and yin yang. For those of you who think about that, we're pretty serious about it. And when we say philosophy of science, it's not all philosophy. We're just focused actually on how we do science and the foundations under that. When we're doing systems change, it's a little different from what we're trying to do when we're doing systems as static. Service science is a new field because there's been a lot of work on production systems. Now the focus on service. Systemic design, Peter Jones at the bottom of that list is a professor at OCAD University. He's one of the leaders of the Systemic Design Association, so we're tied in with them. And there's practice theory that's for those of you who are into communities of practice. There's a lot of work that's been done in that domain. All those parts in blue are all the parts we added on to what traditionally we would have thought of as system thinking. The number one lesson I have for system thinking is, with authentic system thinking, synthesis precedes analysis. Well, what's that mean? So thinking synthetically means placing together parts into wholes. And you go, oh, synthesis is such a hard word. And it's like, well, actually, you learned it when you were in school. Photosynthesis is how the plant puts things together. So you have the sun, you have the soil, you have the seed, these sorts of things. And if you can contrast the thinking analytically, which is loosening the whole into parts, which would be, as you see, cutting a tree and then saying, oh, I want to understand how this tree works. And so you have to cut down the tree and then you have to look inside. So when we want to emphasize thinking synthetically, we actually are focused on trying to put things together. And this is usually consistent with what designers do. And a lot of work on design is about synthesis and putting things together. Now, what we add, and this is at the bottom of the chart, system thinking, system changes learning adds thinking dyadically over time. And this comes a lot from Chinese philosophy. And if you think about this, looking at photosynthesis, the interesting part about people thinking about photosynthesis is that that's kind of what happens, but there's this other side that happens over time, which is nighttime. And so there's cellular respiration at night. So there's photosynthesis during the day, but there's cellular respiration at night. And we should actually look over time. We shouldn't just look at that one point and say, oh, this is what a tree is all about. So we have what's called a processual philosophy, which means that we really are looking about changes over time. And with that, you talk about the movement as opposed to talking about a single point. So we have, as an example, the sun waxing and waning. You've probably heard this term waxing and waning before. Let's get clear what it means. Waxing means that it increases in strength. The waning means it decreases in strength. So obviously the sun rises at noon, it's at maximum strength. And then at sunset, it goes down and then you don't see it at all. It goes around. This is a dyadic approach. Dyads in yin yang are waxing and waning. Now, the difference when you're thinking about this in terms of systems and the research we're doing into systems change is that a dual is kind of like black or white, binary. So that'd be sun or no sun. Whereas we're saying, no, it's actually a cycle over time. You should be following how things wax and wane. And this is going to be something that'll be a challenging for you as you're working through the workshop, because it's a different way of thinking. A shift in the way that we think about systems, and you'll find this when people talk about systems thinking, a lot of the system thinking is thinking mechanically, or thinking about mechanisms, and they think about causality. One way of describing this, if you think about water skiing, The motion is cause versus causality. The motorboat tows the driver, tows the skier. And so, you know, you can go kind of with the cause effect here. So the motorboat stops, the skier stops. What we should be thinking about, if we're thinking about living systems, is about propensity. Because a system actually has propensity. It does things naturally. It has a way of doing things, might call it habits. But if we look at surfing as an example, you could talk about the motion in propensity. There's waves in the ocean and there's a surfer on the board. So when you go out surfing, you actually paddle out and you sit in what's called a lineup. You're actually sitting in the water facing the waves coming in, and then you get to choose the wave. Now, this is not like starting up a motorboat where you cause it. You can't really cause the waves to come. You have to wait for the right wave. And then when the wave comes, you actually decide, you would pop up, you stand on the board, you either turn left or right, and then you go. And there's interesting protocol in the lineup, because in this picture, you see there's actually multiple surfers out there, but one person has decided they're actually going to take that wave. And it's like, it's really impolite. It's rude to take someone else's wave. So there's all this negotiation going on. You've got multiple, in effect, systems, living systems interacting at the same time, but it's not like mechanical. It's not like you cause this or you cause that. And this is the difference when we're talking about system changes, learning, is that people that are having problems with systems change quite often are taking the mechanical approach. It's like, well, I try to change the system, it will change. They go, wait a minute, you should think about whether the system is going to change naturally or not going to change naturally, and you might want to take the right wave at the right time. So this is a different way of thinking about systems as opposed to the static view. Getting metaphorical here, we're going to introduce some terms here, and we're going to have you focus on the idea of rhythms in a living system of interest. And rhythm is actually in philosophy under research area. People are actually much more focused. There's lots of research on harmony, but rhythm is actually interesting by itself. And we can apply that more towards working living systems. Now, if we think about weaving threads together, we have what's called a contexture. And we put them together in the correlated systems of influence. So the dyad in this case that we have at the bottom is a system of interest and it's part of a contexture. Let me try to put that into context for you. And the reason we're using this is that if you think about a band, that's a contexture. So we could have a system of interest being a single sax player. The sax player has this dyad going on, which is exhaling and inhaling. And so both of those happen together. And when he does that, he blends in and is part of the contexture. Typically, when people use the word, and we're trying to be very specific about this, they use the word context. They don't really understand what context means. Context is actually contexture, because the texture is like a weave. So if you think about the sax player is actually weaving himself into the music. Now, you could have different sorts of dyads, different sorts of systems of interest. If you have a duet, as I do in the lower right, now you have a guitar player and a sax player. And they may alternate in playing the melody or playing the rhythms. And so they combine. And so there's a lot of questions about, one, what is the system of interest? And then two, what are each of the, what is in the contexture? Inside the contexture, and I'm going to call it texture, we draw our attention to the rhythmic shifts there. Because just as we talked about the system of interest, the dyad being a line or a thread, you can see that there are multiple threads within the texture. And this is drawn left to right, kind of like you'd see on a timeline. Now, real weaves are messier than this, but the texture has crossover points. And so when we think about how we interact with other people, we think this way, that, you know, that we're all together in this room. So we all have our own threads. We all have our own lifelines. We've come together for this hour, for this day, and we're going to cross over and we're going to form little knots among ourselves. And then we'll go away. We'll have our own threads again. But that's the way that texture works. And so we are part of a texture together in a contexture when we create that. Now, when we talk about learning, there's three types of learning that we have. And I'm going to revert back to the original research that was done by Gregory Bateson and describe it in that way. So Bateson was trying to understand learning, and he got a posting to Hawaii to work with dolphins or porpoises. And so in the first case, it's like, well, you know, let's see if I can get the dolphin to do a trick. So I'm gonna give a treat, and we'll see if the dolphin will do a trick. And so they're dolphins, and they don't pay attention. So that's called no learning. That's not even on the chart. We have proto-learning, which is, okay, so I can the dolphin does a trick, I give it a treat. Dolphin does a trick, I give it a treat. And it goes around and around. And it's like, okay, that's proto-learning. That's a change in response correcting all errors within a set of alternatives. If he doesn't do the trick, he doesn't get the treat. If we move up to the next level, deutero-learning, what happens is that the dolphins, and this is this experiment that Bateson did, could he get the dolphins to learn that they were being rewarded for new tricks? In this case, what would happen with the dolphin comes out, does a trick, you give it a treat. Dolphin comes out and you give it and does the same trick, again, and it's like, no treat. Dolphin thinks, oh, must be a mistake. Does the trick again, no treat. Now the dolphin is angry, acts out, you give it a treat. It's like, okay, tries that same one again, gives it a treat. It turns out that dolphins will learn that they're being rewarded for learning, not for doing the same trick over and over again. And that's a change in response. That's a different set of alternatives doing different tricks. There's a third level above that, which is take the dolphin out of the tank and put them in a completely different environment, a different contexture, and see if they can survive there. And so we have this range of learnings, and all three learnings happen in different places. Different people have different capabilities, getting different levels. Part of systems thinking is to try to get you to the Trito level, which is when you see something happening in a different situation, you see that you may use something different in that environment. I have an example up the right side. So in proto-learning, as an example, in a cafeteria kitchen, you actually want to make sure they do the same thing over and over again, because you're mostly concerned about, you don't want people to get sick. So in a cafeteria kitchen, they're very strict. That's proto-learning. These are the rules. You follow them and you do that. You don't go outside of that. Deutero-learning would be going to the Culinary Institute of America and then saying, well, you're going to learn American cooking, you can learn Italian cooking, you can learn French cooking, you can learn Chinese cooking, and you get those different types of tricks. When you get to Trito learning, it's like, okay, you're on Hell's Kitchen, you're on television, you don't even know what the ingredients are when you get there, you don't know who the team is, but you're going to learn to adjust and work on that. And so these are all types of learning that we're trying to instill with the system changes learning. Now, living systems may undergo systematic change or systemic change. And people, when they talk about system thinking, sometimes get these confused. Systematic is procedural and it happens one step at a time. Systemic is actually of the whole. And so a systematic change could be a caterpillar creeping up a tree. A systemic transformation would be a caterpillar turning into a butterfly or a moth. So when you're looking at a systematic change, you're looking at somatic change, which is an adaptive change or a cellular change. When you're looking at a systemic change, you're looking for a genotypic change, DNA changes, it could be a generational change. When looking at systematic changes, it's often non-living systems. Again, the mechanical systems we talk about, the effect producing, allopoietic systems are like a factory line. What comes off the end of the factory line is not what was, it comes from the parts, it's different from the whole. In a systemic change, they have living systems and you have systems that generate systems. Autopoiesis is the idea of self-generation. When we talk about change though, when you talk about systematic change, it's often reactive. And what we want to do is have systemic change that is co-responsive. Co-responsive means that if you have multiple systems operating with each other, they respond to each other. So it's not like working with a machine that does the same thing over time. When you're dealing with a living being, you're dealing with an animal, you're dealing with another human being, they co-respond. Sometimes they do things you don't expect. They are autonomous beings. They have their own way of life. Okay. This is the crux of what we're going to be doing and the hub and four spokes that come. And this is what we're going to be stepping through in the exercise today. So the first idea is knowing from within. And knowing from within starts off with identifying the system of interest and the shifts that you have in it. Now, the question is, why do you call it knowing from within? We talked about living systems before. people ask about, well, systems change. I want that system to change. And it's like, well, that's fine. Are you part of that system? Well, if you're not part of that system, then are you just telling someone else that they should change? And it's like, well, okay. Can you make it so that they are part of your system? You could expand your system. But if you have this idea of a system should know that it's going to change, or it should sense that, or it should feel it. So if we go to a biological example, go to a human example, sometimes you feel like your rhythms are off. You're just having an off day. Now, we're not starting looking at this cognitively because, you know, if you get a cut or something like that, your body knows internally how to heal itself. But that is knowing from within. It's within your system. Someone could tell you, you know, you should heal that cut. But it's like, well, no, my body does that. That's knowing from within. And so this is really a systems approach, looking at time and trying to learn and know that these changes are coming and understand them if you do it cognitively, but it could be you just do them unconsciously. From there, we go to recognizing contextual influences. So this is actually in the texture, as I told you before. So if knowing from within was about the sax player or the duet that we had seen before, the recognizing contextual influences is what's happening in the band. And so the band could be playing really well, and then you come in and you do a solo or you play. If your rhythms are off, you're going to get into a lot of trouble and you don't really blend in. But on the other hand, you could be a brilliant musician and you could actually solo on top of what they're doing. And so you may add something. But the contextual influences there, you would have to recognize whether there's other strong players in the band, you know, what they've been playing together, whether they're novices, all these sort of things. When they're playing, like someone's having a good day, someone's having a bad day, all these sorts of things are happening in the contexture. From there, we do diagnosing rhythmic disorders. And this is starting to get that kind of medical sense when you feel about this, because it's like you go to the doctor and you say, oh, I'm not feeling well. The doctor would ask firstly about your contexture. It's like, oh, well, what's changed? You know, have you been working out more? You've been eating less, these sort of things. And you go through a diagnostic process. In the diagnostic process, what we're looking for is rhythmic disorders. Now, the orientation here, and again, we're using the medical metaphor, is that you're not going to a doctor unless you want some treatment or you want some advice on it. So system changes learning is that way, is that you don't really do system changes learning if you could figure it out. If there's already a clear path, like, you know, if you do A, it'll lead to B, then it's like, you don't need to go around the circle. But what happens quite often is, you know, you're not feeling very well and you go to the doctor and they say, oh, you're feeling off. You know, what's changed with you? Let's go through a diagnosis phase and try to figure out why it is that something is off. After that, there's a prognosing of likelihoods. Now, the interesting thing when you read the medical journals is that the prognosis phase is something people don't think about so much, because diagnosing and saying that you have these symptoms and this is why we think you're sick is one thing, but then what do you do about it? Prognosing says, well, it's kind of that joke, you know, well, you can take an aspirin and you'll be better in 7 days, or you don't take the aspirin, you'll be better in a week. It's that sort of thing, but it is a likelihood, because you're actually projecting out in the future that if you take this action now, that something will happen and you'll get a result out of it. Now, when you're prognosing the likelihood, this is knowing from within and pushing yourself into the contexture. So the prognosing actually happens in the contexture. It's not just you. So you think about this, you're the sax player, and you know, you're feeling off that day, and you go and you're diagnosing and you're saying, oh, you know, I should actually go practice some more because my rhythm's not very good. And then when you come to the band, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, am I helping them? Like, are they all playing fast? They all playing slow? And then you assess whether, if you actually tried to make a change to that band, change the rhythm that they're playing, whether they'll follow you or not follow you. The last stage is reordering pacing. And the pace that you're changing, it may may require a systemic change or maybe a minor change. So it could be that if you're in this band, that it could be just you have to play faster or slower and you can stay within the constraints. But it could be that in your band, it's like, we have too many saxophone players. Maybe I should switch to playing another instrument because we don't need that many sax players. So there's reordering, and there's theory behind this, and we'll go through all of that. So this is a circle, the circle that we go through, and on the worksheet, the workbook that you have, we'll be coaching you through each one of these. And I'll go through some more details on these, and then some examples. And the way that I'm going to talk about this is I'm going to, there's a variety of slides to follow. I'm going to present the idea. I'm going to go through two examples to kind of give you a sense of what we're looking for. And then I'm going to give you some hints afterwards as to some of the theory and stuff that's behind it. Oh, just as a note, for people that want rigor and people do modeling, I use object process methodology. And so these have extra, the dotted lines and the shading and all that extra, has extra meaning, which most people are not going to be concerned about for now. Okay, so I'm going to set you up for the workshop. Okay, so you're going to, in the Google Doc, you see a sheet that looks like this. So knowing from within embodies a becoming within rhythmic shifts. Okay, now there's some key ideas here. So knowing from within is an embodiment sort of thing, because you have a system. The system has to know that it's going to change. It's becoming as opposed to being. You're focused on rhythmic shifts, and you've identified a system of interest, and it's a synthesis of corresponding dyadic processes, which is the yin and yang. So the questions that we ask, the guiding questions we ask, so first, which rhythmic shift is present to you, or you do multiple rhythmic shifts? And this is to get an idea of and easing you into thinking about the system, which is the second question. But since we're focused on systems changes as opposed to systems as they are by themselves, we actually are going to focus on the changes part, because otherwise you wouldn't notice. So there must be a reason that you're attending this workshop. And in the pre-work for this session, you had actually created some list of rhythmic shifts. If you want to start with that, that's great. If you want to change from that, that's great as well. You can work that out in your groups. But we'll start off with that. What rhythmic shifts are most present to you? Secondly, we ask, what is your system of interest? And the system of interest can and should know, because there's either organizational knowledge, it could be personal knowledge that is there, and can adapt and or learn. So those are presumptions you have of learning systems. You're going to change something internally that will actually influence something externally. Then we have the tough one, and that's why you need some extra time to get through this. Which two dyadic processes carry on synthesizing to sustain living? Now, for those of you who are not familiar with yin-yang, and most of you aren't, and we're still working our way through trying to explain yin-yang from the Western point of view. Yang is like working. Yin is like resting. Yang is like dissipating. So if you look at the original, yang was like sky and yin was like earth. So dissipating would be like air, and materializing would be like earth. Expanding is like air, contracting is like earth. So what's going to happen is, again, because we're looking at this idea of synthesizing, is we're going to actually ask you to try to work through what are the two processes that that you have that do that. Okay, so I'm going to work through an example. So let's consider a shift. So the rhythmic shift we're talking about is a pandemic, working from home, switching into family life. Which rhythmic shifts are most present to you? So residents are living together and working together in close quarters. And the easy conveniences you used to have are now you actually required to, have to plan to go do any resource. You have to, the stores are not open, you have to do that sort of thing. So that's the rhythmic shift we're going to talk about. What's your system of interest? System of interest is a household. Okay, that could be a family. It could be an individual in a household, and you can work that out. Which two dyadic processes are you going to talk about? And so we're going to have two. One is working, which is providing income, and the other is, we're going to call it domesticizing, which is homemaking. And so you can kind of see these in a way of thinking through the dyadic processes is you actually could do it like a clock. What do you spend your time doing? And it's kind of like the dualistic way that we don't want to do is working, not working. That's not what we want. We actually want to say that your life is you're in a household. To keep the household going, you have to be working, and you also have to be doing homemaking or domesticizing. A second example, consider a shift where we had a software app for venue vaccination tracking. So let's go back in time. The pandemic came on. People used to be able to go to restaurants, and now it's like, oh, okay, they're supposed to keep track of people come to restaurants. Well, wouldn't it be nice if we had an app for that? So which rhythmic shifts are most present to you? So you have visitors who previously anonymous, you want them now tracked. The venues that check, they record the names at the door. And it might be an organization like Civic Tech that's running this, that it will make Civic Tech the system of interest here. It's a collaboration between volunteer technical professionals, a small organization in the region. So they go to restaurants and they do that. What two dyadic processes going on? Okay, so there's multiple ones you could choose from, but let's focus on the dyad of privileging access of personal records for entry, because that's something that you have to do, which is, but you never had to put your name, let alone your vaccination record, before you went to a restaurant, and the right to be forgotten after a number of days. So those are two processes, and they happen, and when one goes up, the other one goes down. And so that's the dyadic processes, and you'll need to work through some of that, and it'll be a challenge for you to do that. Now, here's a hint from the philosophy of science of classical Chinese medicine. Dyadic processes make up a whole with parts that correspond. And so if you look at the diagrams on the left, you've been seeing things like sine waves. Now, you can represent those sorts of things in multiple ways. One way is if you see the blue and the blue solid line that usually represents the sky, and the brown represents Earth. And so you have this idea that going through, changing through time. It can be two semicircles that go into each other, and some represent that with the sun going up and the moon coming up. But this actually explains a little bit of the yin-yang symbol that they've come to, because what happens is that whenever you have a yang, when you're at maximum yang, there's a little bit of yin in it, and when there's maximum yin, there's a little bit of yang. Now, the dyads that they have, I always do yang first, it's the sky first, I think sky and then earth. You have illuminating and darkening, and these are actually expressed as verbs because we want to do motion over time. We're thinking about time as opposed to thinking about light and dark or sun and night, these sorts of things. So you have the working versus resting, warming versus cooling, rising versus descending, dissipating, materialing, scattering, congealing, generating, growing, expanding, contracting. So one of the interesting philosophical things is that in Chinese culture, these things are built into the culture. And so people kind of go, it's natural. So it's, so why is cognac yang, is hot, and scotch is cold, yin? And you kind of go, well, isn't it? And it's like, well, that's like in French where you have things that are le and la. You have feminine, masculine. It's like, okay, that's the way they are. That's the way they accept it. So we're going to have to go over a little bit of a learning curve here to try to get onto that as we do system changes learning. The second, recognizing contextual influences. So we're prioritizing concerns with and by rhythms and the shifts or non-shifts in the corresponding lifelines. So now we're moving from the system of interest up into the contexture. And the question is, what rhythms and shifts or non-shifts in the world correlate to the dysrhythmia? So when we're talking before about knowing from within and going to the doctor, I'm not feeling well, it's kind of like, okay, what's changed in the outside world that connects to that? The second is, what are the systems of influence? Because now each of those systems of influence also have a rhythm, and they also have their own line. And are they tightly or loosely woven together in the contexture? And then do you have the trend of pacing, acceleration or deceleration is influence? That is a temporary thing. So if you leave it alone, it's going to get better by itself. Or do you need to take action, in which case you're going to have to do an intervention of some sort. So let's work through this example again, working from home. So what rhythms or non-shifts in the world, shifts or non-shifts, correlate to dysrhythmia? So the reason we're working from home is there's rate of contagion. It goes up and down. And it is causing congestion in the medical facilities. There's opening and closing of schools by the government that creates ripple effects in our timing, the availability of regions, of vaccines by region, age. These are sorts of things that are impacting whether we work from home, whether we go into the office. What are the systems of influence that in correspondence that are tightly or loosely woven together? I would say they're moderately coupled. They're not tightly coupled. So a lot of this has to do with norms and public opinion on risk to exposure. So it's kind of like you see everyone out or no one out, and it's conventional wisdom. You know, if the pandemic is running high, it's like, well, everyone's going to be working from home. If it's like, oh, no, it's fine now, you see people returning and going to restaurants and going out. The supplies are available, the subsidies and government's forgiveness. These are sorts of things that influence how you would think about your actions as a system of interest. So what trends in pacing, acceleration, deceleration are anticipated to persist? You have public health officials, you have fatigue in among other people, you have the social acceptability of loosely supervised work. Some employers want you to come back in the office, other ones are kind of like, well, we don't care. So is that a permanent change? It's up to you to judge those sorts of things. The software app. Okay, so if we're going to build a software app, what rhythms would correlate with that? Okay, so there's been a drop in customer visits to small businesses. So small businesses are going to be interested in the app if it helps them bring people into the store. There's a non-traceability of contagious individuals. So the customers to the store are going to be more interested to come if they think they're going to be safe. What are the systems of influence and correspondence that are tightly or loosely woven together? These are actually pretty loosely coupled because you don't have to use the app, right? So adoption of smartphones, if people use the smartphones, more people have the app, then that's good, but not everyone's going to have it. The documenting vaccination electronic is already done by institutions. So when you get the shot, they give you paper. They may also give you an electronic record, makes it make it available to you. And then you have all sorts of jurisdictions on data about what can and can't be released, which is one of the things you have to work through. So what trends in pacing, acceleration, deceleration anticipate to persist? Do you think, and this is now you get into judgment calls because you're looking at the contexture, do you think this is a pandemic that is here forever, or is it an endemic that's just going to turn to a flu? And how's that shape whether you would build this app, not build this app, how much effort you're going to put into it? Also a distaste for returns or shutdowns. Maybe if people have the app, you know, we could just start using it frequently and we just get comfortable in using it. It's like, oh, you don't need it sometimes. Well, that's great. That's fine. Okay, so thinking about the contexture can be looked at in multiple axes if it helps you, because not everything happens right next to you. There are things that, if we look on the x-axis, there is urgent versus important. And we follow Eisenhower's belief that things are either urgent or they're important. There are things that are not in between. So urgent would be like if you're on a battlefield and you have to summon a medic right away, as opposed to going to a neighborhood clinic if you're sick, right? So you have urgent versus important. You also have local versus distant, which is, are you directly connected to that in the contexture? So if you're on the battlefield and that's local, but in the other case, if you actually need a treatment and you're doing trauma, that's distant because you don't get the treatment on the battlefield. You actually would go to an emergency room, a trauma center. In the upper right, we have the distant important. Operating room teams are scheduled in a particular way. You follow the schedule. Emergencies are handled separately, and they're managed that way. So when you think about the contexture, you might be focused too much on the local or urgent, but you should also be looking at the distant and important because they influence the long-term viability of the system as it goes forward. Okay, number three, diagnosing the rhythmic disorders. Now we're looking at pathology and there's four cases. And we'll go through the four cases. So the first, and let's be clear in the examples. Is there an immediate pathology showing yin and yang or excess consumed? Is the pathology brief or long lasting? And is the pathology trapped in a cyclical transformation? Okay, so there are four cases if you're working from home. You're overworking or you're over domesticizing. So you're spending too much time working or you're spending too much cleaning. There's under domesticating. You're not spending enough time cleaning or you're not spending enough time working. And so this is when you start thinking about, okay, what is actually the shift that's the problem? Because we're thinking like medically, it's like, okay, so if we're having a problem or a conflict at home, is it because we're overworking? Or is it because you aren't working enough? And so there's a yin and yang that happens here, and there's four cases. So overworking, what happens is that you're working too much, but you're actually cleaning enough, in effect. Over domesticizing would be cleaning too much, but working enough. Under-domesticizing means you're actually working enough, but you're not cleaning enough. Underworking means, sorry, underworking would be you're not working enough, but you are cleaning enough. So there's four cases to that. And this is the tough part when we're starting to think about, well, what's wrong and what's happening with the shift in the system is that's one of these four symptoms. Secondly, is the pathology acute, brief or long lasting? If it's acute, you could take a break. So take a break from working or cleaning, whatever. Or if it's chronic, then the habit becomes a compulsion. It's like, oh no, you actually require intervention, something happening from the outside because it's going spiraling in a bad way. Now you also have the case pathology gets trapped in a cyclical transformation. Overworking turns into under-domesticizing. So what happens is that if you're working too hard, you keep working too hard, you get so tired, you don't have time to clean. And so one flips into the other. And that's part of the trickiness of yin and yang. But when you see when you actually see a Chinese medic, a Chinese doctor, they actually go through these sorts of procedures that you've caught yourself in a trap where you think, if I just stop working, I'll be fine. It's like, well, no, there's actually an effect after that. It's kind of like a hangover. Okay, so in the case of the software app, we're balancing between these two pathologies. So overprivileging, so providing too much permission, so people can see too much data, or over-forgetting. It's like, okay, the record is not available, so that the whole purpose of the tracking app is that you should be able to see spread among people, and if it forgets too soon, then it's like, oh, that's not good. Under-forgetting, under-privileging. So you can choose from the acute, whether it's a temporary thing where it's not working, or it's a chronic thing where you've got an app that's unreliable, and you may have a trap going in that circle. Let me go to the general case, which is traditional Chinese medicine. For people that are really interested there, these are the actual terms they use in traditional Chinese medicine: full heat, full cold, empty heat, empty cold, and the transformation within. And the diagram looks like this. So if you're looking at the upper left, what happens is that the yin, the brown line, is actually within normal range, but you've got excess yang. This is working too hard. In the upper right, you've got the over-domesticizing, cleaning too much, but you're working at a normal pace. And so you can see that what you would do is pick one of these four conditions and try to determine what's the actual diagnosis of the problem. And then from there, is it going to persist? Okay, so prognosing the likelihood. Okay, you decide you've actually figured out what the diagnosis is, what the problem is. How is it that what action you're going to take, or what should you do about it? So there's three ideas here, and there's actually when, where, and whom. So we'll take them one at a time. So when in the contexture, now you're thinking about the band as a whole. Now you're trying to fit into that. When's an auspicious time? It was funny that auspicious, for people who are Chinese, they get used to, or people actually in South Asia as well. Auspicious is a term we use. When we got married, there is a Chinese calendar, and there are lucky days and there are unlucky days. Lucky days are auspicious. So we're thinking about the surfer on the wave, and auspicious time is there's lots of waves out there, and there's inopportune times, which is there's no waves. So when in the contexture is there an auspicious time when you could actually do a treatment, take an action? Secondly, where in the contexture is a propensity with advantage or disadvantage? So again, we're looking at the wave. So it may be, okay, it's not just the timing, it's the place that you actually choose to go surfing. And then who are the likely sponsors, beneficiaries, and the disenfranchised from the treatment? So when you actually go through, who would actually back you on this? Who's going to benefit by it, and who is not going to benefit by this? So working from home, when's an auspicious time to be making changes in your working from home? Well, when you can't really do anything when you're under full shutdown, that's really an opportune time. So the auspicious time is when restrictions are eased, people try to do things. And what did you do? You might rearrange your housing or furniture. So, a lot of people doing home renovations during the pandemic. A lot of people switching careers from unfulfilling jobs. I'm not sure that in the middle of the pandemic, if you had a choice, you want to break up a personal relationship at that time. Or if you're used to doing in-person training and you're a social learner, then that might be the best thing. Who are the likely sponsors? If you're going to make a change in your working from home status, in the family. Hope you have that sort of thing, have that sort of benefit. Who benefits from working at home? Introverts and people who had long commutes are the people that don't have to do that anymore. They like working from home. The people who are disenfranchised, the people who want to go back to the office, the extroverts, the people who are non-careerist, they are the people that would actually prefer not work from home. Venue vaccination. When's an auspicious time to be creating an app? Well, this is a volunteer organization. So as software developers have free time, that's a great time to be looking for it. Looking for help to do that. An inopportune time would be when small businesses are too stressed to engage. So you don't have a customer or people that will help you build the app from the customer side. It's inopportune. Where is our propensity with advantage? If you're working with a high-touch service provider, so if someone is already technologically used to using apps, those sorts of things, and they have trained people, that's great. Convenience-oriented consumers love it. But people who are off the grid, who are privacy conscious, that don't want to give their name, they're not going to really be into this. And if you have remote places, so outside of the city where there are low volume operations, those businesses may not be interested in this. Who might be a sponsor for this? Well, you know, might you get a trade association to sponsor this sort of thing? Beneficiary, the typical citizen who has a smartphone. Disenfranchised, the people that don't have smartphones, the people that actually are anti-vaxxers because this helps track them. When you're doing prognosing likelihoods, what you're trying to do here is actually try to get the answer, ask the right question. Thomas Pynchon wrote this quote, if they can get you asking the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about answers. For those who have done statistics, you understand that there's usually type one errors and type two errors because you're looking into the future and trying to figure out from propensity what will actually happen, but you actually can't be guaranteed it's going to happen. So you might get a false positive. So you say, oh, I think that I'm going to take this treatment, and the false positive would be finding a relation that isn't real. So you're saying, oh, this works. And you go, no, it doesn't actually work. The false negative would be saying, oh, this doesn't work, but it actually does work. The type three errors are the ones where we have to be careful. And this is what we're the most valuable part of system thinking is we don't want to be tricking ourselves, which is the unintentional error of solving the wrong problem precisely. We want to solve the right problems. And going through the procedures we have, we don't want you doing the prognosis until you've done the diagnosis. People often jump to the conclusion. What is the action I should take? No, let's think through and work through all these steps first. So tricking ourselves, we want to watch out for. Ian Mitroff introduced the idea of type four errors, with the tricking errors, an intentional error of solving the wrong problem. And this is misinformation. And we're getting a lot of that these days. And so the way that we fight misinformation is trying to step through these processes and understand the systems and how they weave together. Okay, the last part, reordering pacing. We're resequencing, I'm going to fall into philosophical terms here, the disclosing of subworlds where a new normal is adopted and sustains a style of coordinated action. Now we're actually talking about getting people to actually get on board and do what they said they were going to do. So I've actually had some medical checkups, and it's kind of like, oh, I should lose some weight. And so the prognosis, you know, rhythmic disorder, well, I'm feeling a little sluggish. The prognosis is you should probably lose some weight. Reordering pacing is kind of like, okay, am I actually going to change my life to lose weight? Can I actually do that? How will the skills be developed to deal with now? There's three ways that you can look at this. So there's unfolding nature, which is just go with the flow. There's this idea of Wu Wei in China that they have, which is, you know, just go with the flow and things will work themselves out. Or two, do you have to fix a problem, in which case you need some extra skills to deal with that? Or are you actually making history? And that would be a change where we hadn't thought of it before. Now, we'll look into this, and there are systems inside a system. So the second point is, will the treatment be supported or constrained by the slower, larger lines here in the contexture where there are systems above and there are systems below? The slower, larger lines constrain what you can change. The faster, smaller lines are those other threads that will, you may be able to get a quick hit, but it may not scale. It may not last for very long. And then the third is, how will negotiations proceed? with corresponding lines. And so you actually have to deal with the contexture, with lines in the contexture, and you get commitments from them that you're going to move forward. Because within this model, knowing from within is one thing, getting the contexture to move is another. Okay, so on the case of working from home, so what skills do you have to deal with this, and what type of issue we're dealing with? And I would say that working from home is fixing problems. Work from home has been around for a long, long time. It's just that a lot of people haven't done it. Now, the problem you have to do is that if you're used to going into the office and you have all of a sudden the freedom to schedule yourself, it's like that's a shift. And so you can learn to do that. So you can learn to schedule time. And you could take time off, you work, coordinate. Co-working with colleagues never met in person and coordinating over time, that's something you learn to do. But that's a minor sort of thing. It's not like history making, maybe for you personally, if you've never done it before, but in the larger scheme of things, this is just fixing a problem. How will this treatment be supported by the slower, larger lines, the faster, smaller lines? And so the slower, larger things, infrastructure providers are the larger systems. And so broadband internet, you can get into that. If you don't have broadband internet, it's going to be a problem. You'll be constrained by that. You may need to upgrade your internet to a faster speed. The smaller, faster systems, what's happened is that online ordering has now become a ship to home. It's made work from home much simpler. So people don't go to stores, and that's quite rapid. It's an easy thing to do. How will negotiations proceed corresponding lines across commitments of a new texture? What you're doing is, so you'd have to negotiate increasing mobility across employers. Do people stay at their jobs or they job hop more? Because if you work from home, you're not going to the office anymore. What's the expectation on that? And so people may be thinking about their jobs differently because it's easier to move when you're working from home. Rebalancing parental responsibilities. If you're both working from home, it used to be one person working from home. You may be changing that sort of balance, but who does what? You've also got migrating away from urban cores. People don't need to be working downtown, living downtown if they're working downtown. So there may be that change. If we look at the software app for vaccination, I would claim that we're making history. Unfortunately, we don't have standardized vaccination records in Canada. If we had them already, it might be a whole lot easier. But the app has to be easy to use by typical citizens. So currently, when you look for people's vaccination cards, the yellow books or whatever they are, people can't find them. So it is making history in that sense. The slower, larger systems that are already in place, the institutions are already there. The health authorities are already there. They authenticate the validity of the data. The smaller, faster world, there's actually lots of software you could build. You can assemble things, and so you could do that, and that's quite easy to get to. What negotiations are we required to make the commitments in the future? You need at least moral support by municipal and regional leaders, because if you're going to build an app and you're going to use it in the jurisdiction, they kind of go, yeah, we like it. If they don't like it, then you're not going to get very far. It'd be nice to have some recognition for the contributors towards building and deploying the app, because people are volunteering their time. And so they should be recognized as one of the contributors. They'll use it in their career. Okay, so for thinking through the slower, larger constraints, this is, for those who haven't seen Stuart Brand's How Buildings Learn, you can look on YouTube. There's a BBC series called How Buildings Learn, and he thought about change in this way. You have the site, which is the foundations of a house. You have the structure, the load-bearing walls. Around that, you put in the skin. The skin protects the outside of the house. Inside of the load-bearing walls of structure, you have services. This is like plumbing and electrical. You have the space plan, which is non-load-bearing walls. And then you've got stuff, which are the chairs and furniture that you move around. Now, when you're talking about doing a small change, in effect, you're rearranging the furniture. Or let's take space plan. So you decide to renovate your home and you think, well, you know, I'm going to make some changes. And you go, okay, you can make this change in this house quite easily because it's a non-load-bearing wall. If you tear out that wall, put a doorway in it, it's no problem because there's no electricity or no plumbing running through it. But if you decide that you're actually going to go to that next level and make that change, the services are what constrain the space plan. There's no problem with the stuff. You can move furniture around all the time, but the space plan is what constrains the space plan is constrained by services. And there's where you have an upper and lower level. So that's the way you think about bigger and smaller systems. There are four types of commitments you make. There's a commitment to produce a deliverable, a commitment to follow a process, a commitment to provide a capability, and a commitment to a relationship. And these things are often differentiated. And so the question is, if someone's asking for a commitment, and this is when you're working with the contexture, what is it you're promising, or what is it they're promising to you? Is it at a point in time you'll produce something? So you will deliver an app as an example, and it'll be that that on that day you will deliver that app, you will sell that house, you will deliver that product. Or do you have a commitment to follow a process? If you go to court, you don't get a deliverable. You follow a process, the legal process.
Sorry, that's the commitment. Sorry to interject, David. I'm just giving you a bit of a 1 minute warning. I just realized that was pretty, yes. But I know you're at the end of the presentation anyway. So I want to give you the heads up.
Yep, I'm nearly done. So commitment follow process. The commitment to provide a capability. If you next time you go on a telephone call center line and you're waiting, don't blame the agent who's on the line because of the long wait. It's a capability that was provided. The number of people in a call center is not within the control of the agent. The same sort of thing, if you're on a streetcar, it's hard to yell at the streetcar driver because the streetcar driver just follows the tracks and they can't control the traffic. They're providing a capability. The last one's a commitment to a relationship, which is we do things for each other and we have relationships and you contribute towards that. And that's different from the other type of commitments. And those actually come with contextures around them. Okay, so at the end of the workshop, we're going to ask you to work through these, action learning process. And one of the action learning process requirements is that you actually document what you did. So in the last 30 minutes of today, what we'll do is, if you'd like to answer the questions, what did you learn during the workshops collectively? What more do you need to learn? What options did you choose? And how did you get there? And you might go through the slides on that. Which paths did you disfavor and why? Because there are other things that you did choose not to do, but it could be that in the future, if you came to look at this problem or this issue or this rhythmic shift again, you would go, oh no, we already thought about that. And now it's become a case where that other path that we didn't take becomes viable. And then what actions are next? So this is where we are, and we're going to break. And I'm going to ask Ruth now, because I'm more or less done. to guide us into the next sessions, I guess. Ruth?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for passing it over. So when you arrive, I'm actually also able to assign you to your teams in your breakout room. So we'll go ahead and get that started. For when we're going to return, that will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're in Vancouver, that will be 10 a.m. If you're in Edmonton, that'll be 11, Winnipeg 12. Halifax at 2. If you're way out there in St. John's, it'll be at 2:30. So it'll be one of those times, depending on where you are. And we'll go ahead and get you assigned to those rooms when you return. And we'll see you back then.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. See you soon.